Alain Sylvain started a career in advertising only to realize there was a new market opening up which would better suit his skills and strategy. Sylvain Labs was launched in 2010 in the so-called innovation consulting market, somewhere between a creative agency and business consultancy. At the heart of their business is a focus on strategy, helping companies to develop and launch new products and solidify their brands while communicating their purpose and ethos. With offices in Manhattan, Amsterdam, and Richmond, Virginia, their extensive client list includes GM, Google, Nike, and LVMH. You may also recognize Alain's name from a story in Monocle last year on side hustles. Sylvain Labs is a partner and investor in the premium headphone company Master & Dynamic. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. Today, Alain is here to talk about brand strategy, creativity, and a demand for what he calls outsourced entrepreneurship.
It's an innovation and brand design consultancy. So we help companies develop new products or new approaches to their brands. It's a very niche form of management consulting, so it's not really a category many people know about. That category emerged maybe 15, 20 years ago. It's just a few players, but that's what we do. So we work with a lot of big companies when they have new products that they want to develop or they want to create a new brand or refresh a brand.
That's really interesting. I guess we used to live in a world where a big brand would already have the idea of what it is and they'd work with a big ad agency and it was more about selling that advertising. Now we're stepping back a little bit and helping people develop sort of the whole concept of what they would want to put out in the world. How did you get into that? Where does your background sort of mesh with that?
Well, actually, it connects. So I worked in advertising for a long time and our job there was really to persuade people to want things they didn't really need. And it was really... the need was very separate from the want, the desire. Mm. And advertising was invented to really create and romance a real sense of desire and aspiration. And really recently, there's been a merging of the two where the consultancies that are really working more on the need. And from there, the persuasion or the act of selling is actually quite intuitive and easy. You know, if you start with the need, what people really, really, really want, as opposed to thinking about, you know, how can I put a really cool looking dude smoking a cigarette, you know, it's starting with the insight. And I started, so I started in advertising and worked a lot in insight and advertising strategy. And from there grew really frustrated. I felt that advertising was really disingenuous and again, persuading people to buy things and do things they didn't really want in the first place. Didn't feel right. I wanted to be closer to people's actual needs. And that's where innovation consulting kind of came about. And I started focusing on what people like, really wake up in the morning feeling and wanting, and from there developing products and experiences for that. So there's actually some virtue in it, in that it delivers on what people are craving.
I guess a lot of times we bring up the idea of the eureka, the aha moment, but for you it sounds more like it's a bit of a slow drip. This is, you know, something you're thinking of over time. Where does the idea come to launch your own company under your own name?
No, you're right. And I'm glad you make that point, because the eureka myth is something born out of advertising, this Mad Men-esque moment where, you know, I've got the big idea and the big idea is blah, blah, blah. The truth is, we all know that great innovations and enlightenment when it comes to ideas really comes over a slow drip and building after, you know, much time. My idea came about, it's not going to sound very novel, but basically I saw creative agencies and creative communications thriving. So companies investing in creativity. And I felt that I was a somewhat creative person. At the same time, I saw management consultants and traditional business consulting thriving. And I felt that I had a somewhat understanding of business. And there really felt like there was a sort of an open space in the middle. If you could have a creatively driven business consultancy or a business-minded or disciplined creative agency, what would that look like? And that's really what the idea was. And I worked at a similar place and felt that it had failed in a number of ways, culturally and creatively, and I thought there was a white space. And I talked a couple of people into joining me. This is about 9 years ago now, almost 9 years, and it was a ride. You know, the first few years were very, very intense, and it wasn't until about 3 or 4 years into it that I really realized that it was clicking, and we were actually fulfilling a need in the marketplace. And so it's been positive since then.
9 years ago and probably just a few people, I can only imagine that the company has grown and the partners that you have now. Does it look the agency today as you envisioned it, or is it just changing all the time?
It's changing all the time. A lot of entrepreneurs have great vision. Elon Musk announced just recently that he's taking a tourist around the moon. And there are these entrepreneurs that we build up in society who have these grand visions like Steve Jobs and Elon Musk and so on. And I can't really say that I had a great vision of what the company was or what we were trying to do in the long term. This was about survival. And it was about doing something cool that helped me support my family and helped me grow. And so I never really had a version of Cvent Labs in the future. And every day I feel very lucky and privileged for what it looks like. But I can tell you there is a great deal of improvisation and iteration happening in real time all the time. You know, the version of Cvent Labs you see today will be very different than the one you see tomorrow or the one that existed yesterday. That's kind of the fun.
You're working with a lot of big clients. If you click over on the website, we're talking about the likes of Google and Spotify, Samsung, Uniqlo. These are huge companies, and you would expect that a lot of times perhaps they would be thinking about doing things in-house. But yeah. how does the conversation start with a company like yours about creating a vision, creating a narrative?
Well, what's interesting is that the greatest brands and most companies are growing in such a way that they can't really retain a great deal of integrity in what they're doing in terms of their vision and their strategy, because the turnover is high and the marketplace is so volatile and technology is disrupting everything, that a lot of companies are missing their entrepreneurial spirit. And there's a crop of agencies like mine that are basically outsourced entrepreneurialism. These big companies are outsourcing their entrepreneurial spirit to companies like mine. There's a whole marketplace for this. Clients develop a brief and they say, we're looking for our purpose or our vision. And can you help us find that? And our job is not to tell them what it should be. Our job is to help them harness it internally, help them put words to, a lot of the time, these kind of abstract notions. We recently worked with BlackRock, which is a management company. They have over $6 trillion in assets that they manage. And this is a company that's obviously doing something right. But where they were struggling was really understanding what that tangible thing was that made that company special. What is their purpose? And we had a relationship with the CMO there, and he asked us to do that work. We met people internally. We talked to investors. We talked to experts and realized what that purpose was and put it into words. And from there, it really informs how BlackRock shows up in the world. That's kind of what I do.
We mentioned the different types of companies there. I mean, there's also banks, Credit Suisse and GM making cars. Yeah. These are very different companies that have very different stories and very different visions, I guess. But how do you then get involved and sort of unpick what you want to tell, what they want to build their brand into?
It's really about what has the most integrity in what the company stands for and is about. What feels most aligned with what they're trying to do and what, frankly, what the world wants from them. You know, it's funny, our client list is really diverse. So as you said, you know, we're in fashion, we're in media, we're in technology, we're in banking. But consumers really don't view their lives that way. You know, with everything is integrated, and what industry is Amazon in, I don't know. And that is really the thread through it all. And so as long as, you know, the companies are staying true to themselves and staying true to what the demand is, I think we're doing our job.
We live in such a time that, you know, consumer is so important as ever, as it has been through time, and the way advertising has changed into brand creation now. But so much of this is about sustainability and you know, impact on society and the environment and things like this. And consumers are so much more demanding, I guess. So brands are really having to come up pressured to lead the way to change, I guess. And they must be feeling that, obviously, if they're working with a company like you to really get their story right.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's funny. Consumers are demanding it more and more. But what's interesting is the practitioners, people like me, are also wanting some of that purpose and that fulfillment in our work. You know, again, working for an advertising agency, after soon enough, you know, if you're really, really good at it, you end up having questions about what you're doing. You know, do I really feel good about this practice? And I worked on carbonated soft drinks for a bit, and it was kind of hard to do that because this high fructose corn syrup and, you know, health epidemics and obesity, and I didn't like playing a part in that. And as a practitioner, I expected more for my work. And so what I've tried to do at Cvent Labs is try to create a way to do this work, but still have some virtue. Consumers, even the idea of a consumer, quote unquote, is sort of an outdated notion. The idea of people out there that want connections and meaning in their purchases and their behaviors is for real. That's like a thing.
Brooklyn seems to make sense for where you're headquartered, based on what we're talking about. But what about Amsterdam and Richmond, Virginia?
Yeah, right. No one ever asks about Amsterdam as much as they do Richmond, Virginia. But actually, we're not headquartered in Brooklyn. I live in Brooklyn.
Okay.
We're headquartered in downtown Manhattan. Amsterdam came about because we were doing more and more work in Europe. And I felt that London was a very competitive for my space. There are actually quite a few companies that like mine here. And Amsterdam was, you know, there are a lot of pan-European headquarters there. The design and creative community is so rich. And it was just a cooler city, frankly, for me. And I could see myself there. And so that was an easy decision to make. And now we have about five people working on that office. Richmond, Virginia is, I have a connection to Richmond, Virginia, because I'm on the board of a school called the Brand Center, which is like a brand marketing graduate program. And I've hired probably a dozen students from that school over the past 9 years. And some of those graduates wanted to go back to Richmond, live there. Now, I'm from Queens, New York. I don't know Richmond at all. You know, they have like Confederate monuments. And so there are some things about it that I struggle with. But Richmond has brought such value to Sylvain Labs, and that we really have a connection to the American consumer in the way that you don't, you know, living in a hip part of Brooklyn or having an office in Soho. You're pretty disconnected from the United States when you're in that situation. And so Richmond gives us a real understanding of the U.S. and keeps us honest. And so we have an amazing team there right now, too. We have about six people.
And what about the company in total? How many people are working there now?
We're about 36 people. And we're, like I said, we're mostly strategists. We have some designers and some kind of support roles. But we're growing very quickly right now. And part of my job is to make sure we're growing responsibly. You know, I never felt that headcount was the right way to measure the size or impact of the company, because we hire a lot of freelancers. So we probably have 10 to 15 at any given time. The core full-time headcount is probably 36.
I'm so interested in sort of what you guys are doing in sort of brand and strategy, but you're also involved in a bit of investing as well, which is really interesting. And one of those is Headphones, sort of a company that you were introduced to and then were so inspired by, so sold on what they were doing that you actually got involved.
That's right. I mean, it was it's one of these things I'm really proud of. I talk a lot about side hustles and how we appreciate side hustles and people we hire. And it's important the company has side hustles. And the way Master and Dynamic came about, we met the founder and CEO who felt that there was this space in the headphone market, that there was room for a luxury or higher designed headphone. This is after Beats really blew up and got acquired by Apple. And they really felt that there was something missing in the marketplace. And they were first. And he had an idea for headphones. He didn't have any concept on design or business strategy or naming. And he approached us and we decided we wanted to work together, but I really wanted to be much more of an active participant. And Jonathan, the CEO, was open to it. And we worked out a deal where we took equity in the company at this really fledgling stage. I mean, that's probably 5 years ago at this point. It's gone really, really well. We helped develop it. It's now in the Apple Store. We helped name it. We helped develop business strategy and the thinking behind it. And it served as a model for other deals like that. Some work really well and some don't. What's cool about it is I can work with a big company like a BlackRock on one day and the next day do something really, really grassroots on the ground with a startup. Our job is to kind of find the right ones and the ones that fulfill a certain need and have the right management. So in a way, we feel like venture partners.
Certainly that's about the bottom line, and smart investing is important to anyone. But is that also about finding a hole in the market and trying to fill that with interesting brands and interesting things that can actually do something?
Yeah, that's our strategy. You know, I'm by no means am I kind of an investment leader, and I have modest success in it. But because my day-to-day work is about helping companies find new product opportunities, that's the lens in which I look at investment opportunities. So in the case of Master and Dynamic, it had to be unique for me to really get energized by it. We're working on a refrigerator stable acai bowl called Lilo, which is in 25 Freshies in Canada. You'll know it well. We're in Toronto, actually. And that's something else, you know, that we saw the occasion, the breakfast occasion is changing so much, and we felt that that was a white space. And there are a couple others. I'm working on a smart pet food company. And the same thing, you know, we saw the amount of money going into pet care and seeing the rise of technology and consumer technology, and felt that this covered off on a white space. So those are white spaces, but I'd say the first step for me always is the entrepreneur, the person on the other side of the table, and what they're bringing and how dedicated and disciplined they are about it.
When you are talking to a company about new product, what stage does that normally happen at? They have an idea, they have a concept, and they're coming to you. How do we launch this? How do we present this?
Right. It can be many different points. At the earliest, it could be something like, I'll give you an example. You know, we work with General Motors, helping them develop new products. And they're seeing, you know, the rise of car sharing and alternative ownerships and Uber and Waze and traditional car manufacturing becoming less and less important. In fact, people are expected to buy less cars now. So what should they do? That's a brief for us. That's one type of brief really early on. What should we do? What businesses should we go into? How do we evolve our current brands? My clients at GM, for example, are the ones that made $500 million investment in Lyft. And that's because they saw that that could potentially speak to the future of the company. So that's really early on. And then there are other cases that are much, much later, where there might be an existing product and the clients are looking for some marginal innovation to help keep it relevant or compete with other players. So maybe that's a flavor innovation, or maybe that's about a different occasion or a different pack concept. So it really works along the spectrum. Obviously, the earlier on, it's much more exciting and visionary because you feel like you can do something new. But yeah, I'd say that's the spectrum in which the opportunities come.
I saw a really interesting talk that you did where you were discussing what brands can learn from Beyonce, which I thought was quite hilarious. And you said that was just to sell, you know, people coming in the door, putting Beyonce in the title. But you were discussing the 1980s and how brands created this lifestyle to aspire to.
Exactly.
But that was television. We have this whole other world now of the internet and social media. Has this almost created the perfect world for brands to exist and tell their story in?
I think that's one way to look at it. I don't know that it's the perfect world. In some ways, the 80s, where you had a monologue conversation with consumers where you can portray these aspirations and consumers would buy it and love it. So in some ways, the 80s and 90s were ideal moments for brands. But that also came with detriments because, you know, a lot of these aspirations were not realistic. And at what point do consumers feel let down? So I think the nature of media limited brands in some ways in the 80s and 90s. Today, a lot of people think technology and the internet allows brands great freedoms and direct connections with their users through things like social media. But I think that also opens up a lot of vulnerability for brands, where consumers can really put into question their brands. They can have a direct conversation with their brands and hold them accountable. You know, what's happening in the travel industry is fascinating, how the travel and luxury brand of yesteryear just doesn't exist in the same way. You can't portray these amazing vistas and promise these exotic experiences anymore because consumers have a direct relationship with you and they'll make a different decision very quickly. They can very quickly call you out in social media for letting them down. Things like TripAdvisor are holding them accountable. And that's just one industry. So I would say that it's a much more challenging environment for brands, traditional brands. I think for progressive brands, this climate is actually the best thing possible. It allows them to speak in a new way and maybe have more integrity in how they talk to consumers.
I'm really curious to hear more about the makeup of the company. When somebody hears about your services and your background and what you've been able to do for different clients, I imagine they expect to be working with you, but there's so many clients and so many things. And what is your day-to-day like and in sort of guiding everyone in the company?
Yeah, I have it good. I get to hang out with you, Daniel, and you know, I get to do talks like this. I'm doing more and more of that. Sometimes, you know, clients come in and they want and expect a lot of my time. But the truth is that most of the work and value and brilliance comes from the team. And my job is really kind of to assemble the best team as possible and provide some guidance and leadership at the right time. But we have an amazing, amazing team. You know, two of the people that helped me run the company started with me 9 years ago. So they have a real good sense of what I like and what is good work and what our style is. And so my job at the moments when clients are like, are we going to get some of your time, is to convince them that they actually don't want or need my time. It's really about other things. You know, my day-to-day is to think about our growth, our reputation, to think about hiring. I do mostly business development work, so helping find new clients or new investment opportunities or new ideas. You know, recently we just became a certified B Corporation, which I don't know if you know about it, but it basically is a pledge to put social impact at the core of the company. And that was something that I spent a lot of time on. And that's sort of the work I'm doing, is thinking about how can we align the company with our vision for our lives and what we want. so we feel good coming to work every day.
And is that a good selling point, do you think, for working with clients that are trying to have a bigger impact on doing good, I guess?
Yeah, so it's only been about 3 months old, so I'm only learning what the impact is now. For some clients, it's a huge deal. We got a really big project from Google, in large part because they felt that pledge meant a lot. General Motors, which is also thinking a lot about their supply chain and sustainability, it has a great impact. Other clients, they've never heard of it, and it means nothing. I think it has a more of an impact on the current team, so that they can go to work and feel a little bit better about shilling these products and brands. I think it has a really strong impact for potential talent, because, you know, we really need exceptional people at the company, and it takes a long time to interview and get a job there. And it has an impact on the right-minded clients. But those are the type of things I do every day and type of things I'm trying to bolt onto the company into the future.
You mentioned earlier, being on the board of a school and hiring a number of students right afterwards, people that you recognize their talent early on. We talk a lot on this show about mentors and mentorship and the importance of that in the entrepreneurial world, not as only a business founder, but someone that can pass along a bit of their experience. Do you find that in your day-to-day? Is it interesting to bring young creative minds into the company and help guide them along?
Absolutely. First of all, you know, if you're really a good talent at a young age, you probably have an idea for your own business. And acknowledging that at the interview stage is actually fantastic because there's some honesty there. And the idea that come join my company, you'll learn how to run and be a part of a company, and then you can kind of go off and do your own thing, which is very different than the old school way of expecting someone join the company forever and will never leave and don't have any of their own aspirations, which is ridiculous. Let's have some honesty about it. And so I do try to play a role in mentoring and sharing advice wherever possible. I also seek that out as much as possible. But what I think is interesting about your question is the available network for entrepreneurs is not universal. So most successful entrepreneurs have had a privileged education, family members that have been entrepreneurs, they've seen it done before. They have the space and freedom to ask for seed funding. And not all entrepreneurs are like that. And the ones that I like to spend time with, the ones I like to think about are the ones that are marginalized. And they tend to be people of color that are women or marginalized people who just don't have those type of legacies, who don't have parents that they can ask for. They don't have an inheritance. Maybe they didn't go to an exceptional school. Maybe they're children of immigrants like I am. There's a really high disparity in the world of entrepreneurialism in this way. I know people who have had really mediocre technology ideas that were able to launch thriving companies like today that are worth over $100 million today because they got money from their parents and they asked for the right advice and they showed up at the right meetings and they had the right connections, all by virtue of how they were born and what they look like. And you compare that to other people that are in very, very different situations, and the ingenuity and the grit that it takes for them to succeed is really stand out. Those are the places where I think I can add a lot of value because I can sympathize with some of that experience firsthand.
Do you think there's something in your background that sort of made you into this entrepreneur? There's something about sort of the way you went through school, your first jobs that you said, you know, I have to strike out on my own?
I always had that dream even as a kid. I used to play around with ideas like that. And I'm a middle child. You know, I think I've got all sorts of baggage and issues about that. I've always wanted to hustle. And I knew it was time to start my own company when I started really getting bored with work and I stopped caring about what I was doing and I didn't like the people around me. And I just knew I needed something to light a fire, and I'm a very competitive person, and this just felt like a smart way to kind of channel that energy. And yeah, it was the best decision I ever made in my life. I don't say that lightly. It was a hugely profound decision that changed everything about my life and what I can do and how I value my experiences and how I engage with my family, all of that.
You've mentioned a couple of times the word hustle, and we even featured you in Monocle magazine about the concept of the side hustle. And you mentioned your company as well relies on a number of freelancers, a different number at each time. But you know, it's really funny that I guess the head of a company would be promoting people to be involved in other things, because often we see it as, you know, you work for this company, this is your brand, all your energy and focus should be on this one thing, but you're really promoting people to get out there and get involved in different things.
Yeah. Yeah. You end up finding different talent, you end up having much more authentic relationships with the people that work with you. And I don't think you can do that unless you've got some confidence about your company itself. So Sylvain Labs, I feel confident that we are a really great place to work. And we have issues, things that we're trying to work on, but I don't fear that people have these kind of fleeting temperaments where they're going to leave at any moment. And I'm not threatened by that as much as I'm really invested in the idea of making this place the best place possible to work. You know, next week we're going to Mexico City. The whole company's going to Mexico City. We do it a trip every year. Last year we went to Barcelona. The year before that we went to New Orleans. Those are our moments to kind of invest in the culture and the team. And it's through things like that that give me a little bit more confidence about allowing people to be themselves. Do your thing. And sometimes I can help and be a part of it and benefit from it. I'll give you a couple examples. We had a full-time chef working with us, or someone who was a full-time chef. And he had a really amazing hot sauce recipe that I loved. And eventually we decided to buy gallons of this hot sauce and sought out to package it. And we created a name and tried to commercialize it. We failed horribly. It was sad. It was dark. But now I could say I started a food company. When I meet food clients, I can talk about, you know, the viscosity of hot sauce and what the size of the spout needs to be. And it gives me a really a much greater understanding of the clients we work with. You know, someone else that worked with me that was formerly a contestant on The Voice. He wanted to be a musician on the side, obviously. And it wasn't very much on the side. You know, he was clearly invested in becoming a musician. And I love music and thought he was really talented. And so we helped him. We helped produce his music video. He had time to kind of explore those opportunities. And I think it's okay. You know, I don't want to be around people that don't want to be at work or are thinking about their own something else. I don't want that. You know, I rather, it's very candid and I've got this thing that I'm working on, but, you know, maybe you can help me get there. And so there are people that have come and gone from Sylvain Labs that I'm still connected to that I'm trying to help them do their thing and they're still helping us.
In so much as you can say, perhaps finally, Alain, what's in your plate right now? Sort of what are you focused on in the next steps for yourself and for the company?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. I think one is this marketplace is really on fire. So the idea of this sort of consulting, digital services or transformation or innovation consulting is on fire. And a lot of the big companies are acquiring smaller companies. You know, Accenture made something like 18 acquisitions in the past 6 months or something like that. And I'm not saying that we're going to do that or we want to do that, but I need to be mindful of what the future holds. And that's a lot of my energy these days is thinking about what is our future. In addition, I'm trying to be smart about extending our impact with companies. So we're not just providing strategy. We're not just providing decks and direction. We're also providing some more material impact. And so I'm thinking about how do we package that as a service for our clients. So we're thinking about new brands or partnerships, that sort of thing.
I'm afraid we're out of time on today's show. Thank you to Alain Sylvain for sharing the story of Sylvain Labs. The show was mixed and edited by David Stevens. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.